All right. You ready, girl?
Yes.
Welcome to Just Between Us Girls. This is Columbus's hub for inclusive conversations on building success in male-dominated fields. Whether it's through empowerment, support, or advocacy, we talk all things professional development and breaking the glass ceiling.
Welcome to episode 5 of Just Between Us Girls. I'm your host, Ariani, with Thompson Restoration Associates, and today we have...
Lindsay Romanu with Colliers.
Is that how you say your last name?
Yes.
Lindsay, I've been saying your last name like you're, because I'm learning Polish right now, so I replace all the W's with V's, and I've been saying Lindsay Romanov.
I get that a lot, yeah.
Really?
But it's Romanu.
It's Romanu? Yeah. Oh my God, well thank you for that. Yeah. So now all of y'all know now.
Now you know.
So Lindsay, what do you do at Colliers? Give us a little breakdown. Mm-hmm. What is your...
So, somewhat recently, I'm a senior property manager. So not only do I manage my, you know, portfolio, mostly office and industrial, mm-hmm. but I also, you know, work with the team on department initiatives, and I kind of immerse myself into a bunch of different little buckets at Colliers, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love to hear it, and congratulations on your senior position.
Yeah.
That's always one of those things, like whenever you are posting on LinkedIn and you're like, all right, we up now.
Yeah. Gotta make that change on LinkedIn.
Yeah. And I saw that you did it. Did you do it like day of too?
Oh, I don't know. I try not to make it like a post though.
Yes.
You know, like just real subtle if somebody like mm-hmm. goes in. Yeah.
I will say, I whenever I got my like director position at Thompson, I was going to do this.
My director position.
Just a little something for you.
Yeah.
But when I like got that, I ended up, I was like, am I going to make a post about this? Like what? And at first I was like, no, I'm just going to do the little LinkedIn update and just, you know, let the people come to me.
Yeah.
And then I got really, really sentimental about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, let me go in. And I got on the ChatGPT. And I was like, what is like an appropriate format to say, like, I am now the big cheese?
Is that what you put in as a prompt? Like,
how to professionally, like, you know, because I even asked, because I was wondering, I was like, if you tell a computer, give me a humble, you know, breakdown of how you would say, this is my new position. It was like...
Should have done that for this podcast.
Well, you know what's funny? I actually do use ChatGPT to help me put together my outline.
Oh, but...
One thing I was telling somebody the other day, which, by the way, this does not get into, you know, the details of what we'll be talking about today. One of the things I started using ChatGPT for was being able to, like... I don't believe in getting an original thought from a computer a lot of times just because it's a robot. You know, it's going to give you, like, a I am. But if you say, this is the idea I'm coming with, this is kind of what I'd like it to break down in, will you help me organize and structure this into a way that helps flow? And that's a great way to use ChatGPT that I feel like a lot of people, like, I think right now a lot of people are using it to write captions and like, give me a breakdown of this launch, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But I think that if you stop thinking of ChatGPT as a copy and paste solution, it can be your best tool in your arsenal.
Yeah.
You just have to like add some creativity in it.
And you don't want like people to like lose their voices on their captions. Like that's the stuff that should sound like you.
Yes.
It's the other stuff and organizing your thoughts that could use some mm-hmm. technological help.
Yeah. Like you know, it's a support. It's not the main, it's not the meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
So speaking of, matter of fact, this is just a transition, not speaking of Lindsay. Getting you on the show, I was particularly excited for because you're someone that I feel like I've always had some really good dialogue with. I just wanted to like really, really continue the conversation that we've been having for a while.
Yeah.
Just on like DEI and what
I feel like we were both like fangirling each other because I think we're both, I would say I'm probably not as much as I was even just a year or two ago, but mm-hmm. I still try to be vocal on that platform because I do feel like sometimes those are the spaces that are lacking. Like in my personal social media, you know, I have my own echo chamber of people who think like me, but sometimes mm-hmm. it's nice to be in a different bubble of people who I'm like, actually, people aren't, their algorithm isn't putting this kind of content in their feeds. Mm-hmm. So maybe I can be the one to, show this post. It was a color photo of Martin Luther King Jr. of just like, this wasn't that long ago.
Yes.
And I found it so interesting. And I was like, you know, that could be my post for, you know, Black History Month. Or
what was interesting too about you doing that, that was actually part of my inspo for the Bob Weiler episode, the last episode
I love
we just did.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that was another thing where, like, when he told me that his dad was part of the group that got, like, women to be able to come onto the Columbus Board of Realtors, yeah. I was like, hold on.
Right.
That's, like, he was just alive.
Yeah.
And that just wasn't that long ago. But yet, like, you see black and white photos and you see it, and, like, it makes all of these things seem like it was forever ago when we still have generations of people that are around enough to say, I personally experienced this.
Yeah, exactly.
So, with that being said, I really want to talk about kind of some of the DEI efforts that you've been making at Colliers and jumpstarting that and what that was like for you. And that kind of leads into our conversation about being an ally, being an advocate, but not being a savior.
Yeah.
So how did this come about in terms of, like, you deciding, like, let's get into it. I'm going to do it myself.
So I would say, like, the catalyst for all of this, or at least, like, the, like, what I'm doing now at Colliers is that in 2022, I joined the Leadership for Social Change program through YWCA. And their mission is to eliminate racism and empower women, which obviously really aligns with my values. And I was also super fortunate that a colleague, you know, at Colliers recognized that in me and suggested I do this program.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, fully supported by my team. And it was a year-long program that, when I started, I felt, like, really intimidated by, because I was surrounded by all these amazing women who were doing so much work already. And a lot of them were on nonprofits. And then I came in and I was like, I'm in commercial real estate.
Like,
I'm saving the world here. And I'm like, you know, making a lot of change. Like, it's one of the, like, least diverse industries, you know. So what helped, though, is that program really empowered me to then say, like, no, like, I can make change within my industry, and that you need people, you know, like, who have the same values that I do in all kinds of industries. If we all just, you know, left our industries to go, you know, do maybe that passion work or work for nonprofits, you know, then nothing changes in those industries. And so it's like, you want those allies in tech and engineering, construction, commercial real estate, like, all of the things. And so that sort of prompted me at the end of that year. I put together an outline for a potential DE&I committee for Colliers Columbus. You know, we're a local affiliate. So I was like, you know, I want something just local for our office. And so I proposed that to leadership, and quicker than I even expected, they were like, sure, go for it. You know, and so,
well,
2023 was when it started.
Before you, was there anyone that was saying, like, hey, like, maybe this is something that we should look into?
Yeah, like, I think that's part of why I got the approval so quickly, is I think it's something that they've wanted to, you know, pursue on the local level. Colliers Corporate does have a lot of great DE&I, you know, ERG groups and different programs and positions, you know, from the corporate level. So I just wanted to kind of just take it a little step further of, like, what can I do? What do I have, like, more, I don't want to say control over, but, like, can we get together as a group and just focus locally on our office and figure out what little things of change that we can do?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A couple things there too. One thing I want to ask is, was this something that, was this a program? So you said it was, like, a year, right?
The YWCA? Yes.
Okay. Was that something that you were doing? Like, was that during, like, working hours? Was that, like, an after hour? Like, how did that work for you?
So it's, you have to be able to leave a little early. So they do require your employer's, like, consent. Because it was, like, I think Thursdays and four, maybe.
Okay.
So you have to be able to, like, you know, leave a little early to go to those meetings. But generally, you know, speaking, it's outside of work. Most people can do it with, you know, a full-time job. And I mean, as a plug for them, like, young females, they're trying to, you know, help people who are new in their careers, like, understand and learn how to become leaders for change, like, with, again, within their respective industries. And
because you need it on a micro level too. Like, the reason I ask that is because it is very I know what my organization has done for me in order to, like, you know, allow me to grow in the ways that I wanted to grow. And it is so incredibly important for our organizations to recognize when someone is saying, like, this is something that I would like to pursue. Are you guys okay with that?
Yes.
And if it aligns with your business's morals and core values, letting that person do that, because like, look what it has now done for you, and now what it is doing for Colliers. So,
and creating those like outlets, like, because you don't always have to have the opportunity, you know, within the organization, but just supporting your employees to go even outside and better themselves or get involved. Yeah, 100%.
I think anytime someone just shows initiative of like, hey, I'd like to better myself or learn how I can make others better, just consider it at least. Like, that's just a plea I will make with anyone. If it seems untraditional, just hear the person out. And then the second part that I was going to kind of ask you about too is, I'm sure it was a bit daunting for you, even though this program was really made for, you know, let's empower all of these women to go back to their respective, you know, corners of the world and bring these things back with them. For someone like you, what did that feel like and what did that spark? And why did you, I think a lot of the times we look at things that seem larger than us and we say like, I can't necessarily make a change here or I can't make a difference. It's just, it's a drop in the bucket type thing. But I'm glad to see that a lot of people are taking on the idea that why not me? Why can I not also be the change maker? So what ways do you feel like you've been able to do small actionable things where it doesn't have to be a huge upheaval, all your policies and blah, blah, blah. Like, little things can make big changes too. So I'd love to hear some of the little things you've done that you've kind of, that have been maybe inspired by that.
So yeah, that was something part of the program, not only to like empower me to just like want to do more, but also kind of reset my expectations, because it is really daunting to think like, you know, the commercial real estate, the demographics of commercial real estate aren't going to change overnight. Quite frankly, they probably won't change that much in my lifetime, like in my career in the industry. But those small things, you know, can make a difference. And so for me, it was like, you know, that's why starting this committee, I like the idea of like, you know, something as small as like reading your employee handbook and looking for equity in those policies, anything from bereavement to dress code to parental leave, like all of these little things. Look at your hiring practice, you know, are there procedures you can implement that are really simple, you know, free to help maybe eliminate any bias with recruiting or hiring, you know, looking at resumes.
There's a particular one in that I'd love for you to kind of talk about with what you guys have implemented with resumes and the way that you look at bringing people on.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's something we have talked about is, you know, one of the discussions we'd had as a group was on implicit bias. And again, just kind of looking at barriers to entry for this industry. And there's a lot of research that says like, you know, a lot of times resumes are passed over because even just the name on the resume can allude to maybe another ethnicity or race. And that in and of itself might get that application, you know, removed from the pool.
Darnell may not get the same attention as Kim. And you're right. You're 100% right. And that's a small, free, actionable thing.
Hey, can you remove the names from our resumes when we're reviewing them so that we can make sure we're not unintentionally from the jump, you know, removing candidates from our, you know, our pool of who we're hiring. And it's just, you know, being comfortable with these like really small ideas, because, you know, let's say you get a policy change. Let's say you implement something like that, you know, in actuality, it might only benefit one person in your office or affect one person in your office. But one, hopefully that meant that you were able to advocate for them and they didn't have to speak up for themselves or ask for an accommodation. You know, really making a big difference.
Because that feels crappy.
Like you don't have to.
Having to feel like you are... So when you are the person that the thing... benefits or helps in any way, just like even the playing field, having to ask for that is like, it not only makes you feel like, oh great, like now I have to be the one that like is complicated. It's like when you're asking for no tomatoes in your be at lunch. A lot of people don't want to have to do that because it feels, you feel
difficult,
like
or you don't want to be,
exactly. You don't want to be the difficult one. And then on top of that too, then it also feels like, oh, I'm going to tick this person off with my need.
Yeah.
You know, and almost aggravate a situation that maybe was underlying prior. And now you're almost like bringing that forward.
Yeah. So I feel like to be proactive about it and to do it in this like neutral way, kind of, it eliminates that. And then ideally the goal is like, if we're all going out and doing that, then that is how you get that huge change. It's like, it was that one employee at that one organization, but now it's hundreds of people that are now, you know, positively impacted by these changes because we're all going out there and we're looking at these things and we're challenging things. And it really comes down to just like speaking up and using your voice and getting comfortable with doing that.
Yeah.
Which I'm still trying to do myself.
Well, and that's the thing too, right? Like anything worth doing is going to scare you a little bit. And the only way to get more comfortable is to keep doing it. It's like, you know, like it's like anything where you just have to keep practicing it. It's like a muscle. You have to keep practicing it and doing it. And everything is like that. And it's funny too how you say like we look at it as maybe this is just going to affect one person, but also that's just within your organization.
Yeah.
This policy change or this small actionable thing that helps bring more DEI, just more accessibility to these notions. The nice thing is that it will also maybe open up your pool of talent that's looking at you.
Yeah.
Because if you see something like, oh, hey, and by the way, or even if it comes up in casual conversation as you're talking to an interviewee, oh, and we do remove names from our, you know, applications just to make sure that it's an equitable practice. If I heard that leaving an interview, I would be way more inclined to not ghost the person because I'm like, holy crap, like that's really, really awesome that you do that.
And not just the people who, again, like it benefits maybe directly, but like I agree, like especially younger generations, like that's what people are looking for. And like I want to work for employers that want to work with all types of people. I want to work with all types of people. I want, you know, the best talent and, you know, a diversity of thought to come up with the best ideas. And so, you know, I think it's something I feel like kind of neutral is, you know, paid maternity leave is something where it's like, you know, I personally, I don't know if I want to have kids. I don't know if those policies will ever impact me, but I want to work with moms. Like I want to work at an organization that supports mothers. And so to me, I'm going to look at that policy regardless because I just want to see, you know, are you truly a, you know, family oriented, you know,
you talk about work life balance,
right?
Are you really
let's
living
see
that?
Here,
let's show me the receipt.
And so, and part of I feel like, you know, as that like advocate for change is sometimes speaking that language and just like advocating for it. It doesn't have to be this big thing. It's like, hey, it's something really small that like maybe not a lot of people notice, but the people that notice will appreciate it. And again, it's just like widening that pool of people who are going to want to come to work for your organization and, you know, feel comfortable doing so.
I think so many people right now, like everyone's talking about workforce development, right? And like, who are we hiring? How are we hiring? How are we going to bring on more people? How are we going to bring on more diverse people? And what you just said is exactly, if you want to know how to hire more people and get better quality candidates, that. Truly that, because you need to think outside of the box of what has been done over the last, this workforce, this incoming workforce is very different than I think any
ever.
Really ever. Yeah. One of the things that I, one of the things I talk about a lot is, and this goes like really Oscar for us, but we're here, babes. I, during my mother's generation, she had very different needs during in her job.
Yeah.
And I talk about a lot like Maslow's hierarchy of needs of when we, our parents, well, my parents at least, like they were really, really just concerned first with getting the basic necessities, food, shelter, lights, the things you need to live and be, if not comfortable, but living. But then they kind of settled that and were able to get that foundation going. So then my foundation needs is very different now. They were like, I will take anything that allows me to be consistent, have a good paycheck, be able to spend time with my family, the basic necessities, right? And yeah. now this new generation of workers grew up with those needs met.
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting paid.
Yeah.
first of all. And then too, like, it's consistent. Some people are even getting remote work now. But yeah. now it's going a level deeper where the next hierarchy of needs is, am I emotionally good here?
Yeah.
Am I feeling supported? Our parents didn't have time to think about that type of stuff because they're like, I just need to show right. up, have a place to show up every day and be able to pay my bills. Yeah. And now we have that. So we're kind of on this next level of like, now that that's taken care of,
yeah.
how do I feel at work?
Yeah. I also feel like, I think of two things. Like, one, I think that, you know, some people feel like actually some of those needs are unattainable, like buying mm-hmm. a house. Like, it was so normal that you would just like get your first job and then you'd go buy a house. And the way the real estate market is, you know, even in Columbus, like, that's not super attainable. So I think some people are saying, you know what, if I'm not going to get the house, then I want time off to be able to travel because yes. I can't afford to, you know, buy a home. Or maybe check some of those other boxes that our, you know, parents were able to. Mm-hmm. I also think, like, you know, I'm a lot like my dad, and I think about this a lot, and mm-hmm. We've never talked about it, so hopefully he never finds this podcast, but like, like, he worked a lot till he was retired, and he lives a completely different life now that he's retired, you know, and you grow up with that, and you just say, like, I catch myself getting into kind of that workaholic tendencies,
yeah,
and I'm like, no, I'm not waiting till I'm 60 to live my life. Like, I'm not doing that. And so it's not anything about my work ethic. It's mm-hmm. not entitlement. It's like, I saw the real life mental, emotional, physical
burdens.
Like, yeah, like, consequences of that lifestyle and making a choice that, like, yeah, I'm going to prioritize other things as well, you know, my yeah. overall well-being.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, you have to, the economy has to pivot to that. You know, everyone's yes. seeing that, and everyone's realizing that, like, yeah, it's not just going to cut it anymore to, you know,
just have this
yeah.
standard, what we've had for the last
status quo. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the thing too, is like, when people look at like your when people are looking at benefits packages, you do not have to get insane. Like, I'm going to tell you the truth. If it came to me of like, hey, what we do to make sure that our holiday days are equitable is we give you a DIY holiday. You get a holiday day that you choose whether you want to use that on Juneteenth or if you yeah. want to use that on, you know, another day.
Yeah.
but like, everyone, you know, celebrates different things.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we brought up at our last leadership summit was like, what if we just like did a DIY holiday day where yeah. you choose, this is one of your PTO days, you choose how you use it.
Yeah.
Some people don't celebrate certain holidays, so you can choose it on the holiday that you choose. If I saw that versus, you know, oh, I don't know, we pay you a couple extra bucks if you work overtime, whatever, yeah. the couple extra, just any of those small little things, right?
Yeah.
I'm choosing that holiday day because I'm yeah. like, you just put more thought into that.
Yeah.
It was more purposeful and more thought out about these are the kind of people that we want to bring on, different yeah. kinds of people.
Yeah. I've always heard of like floating holidays, but mm-hmm. I've never really heard it like described. And like, I yeah. wish they did call it something more like that or put a name of like, this is why this exists. Cause I agree. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that people would really appreciate of like, oh, okay, this is their way to, you know, yeah, make time off more equitable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that makes me really, really glad that like more people are having discussions about different things. Like, one of the things that you even were saying, is one of your topics for your DEI committee was size inclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you the truth. That was the first time that I had ever in a professional setting sat and talked to someone about size inclusivity. Because as a woman, look, I'm a girl that likes to eat. I like to eat. And I fluctuate weight. I have a thyroid disease that like at some points yeah. I'm looking trim, and at other times I look like I have my burgers. And with that, you know, like sometimes the same shirt I wore a year ago, now yeah. I have a little more cleavage in or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I don't think we are talking about these little things that are making big mental, that are having big effects on people's mentality around the way that they show up at work.
Yeah.
Well,
and there's tangible consequences with weight. It's, you know, So, you know, we had our, we had a conversation on it in January. I wanted to bring up the topic because in January, a lot of times you hear about New Year's resolutions and people trying to like get thin.
You don't know me.
And, you know, people just don't realize sort of the unintended consequence of that is, you know, it's really fat phobic and it really isolates individuals in larger bodies. And it's sort of this like last form of legal and acceptable discrimination. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, actual like statistics and proof that they are discriminated in the workplace, less likely to get hired, less likely to get promoted, get, you know, paid less, you know, all of these things. And so it's not often talked about in DE&I spaces. It's not talked about in corporate settings. And, you know, it should be. And I think part of it is a really taboo talk, but it's mm-hmm. or topic, but it's something I became really passionate about. You know, when I started an antidepressant, it's like I turned 30, I started an antidepressant and I gained a ton of weight. Mm-hmm. And I was suddenly in situations and having experiences that I didn't have to have before. I carried a lot of thin privilege. You know, I had some eating disorders to attain that thin privilege, but I had them. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it was like, oh, stores don't carry my size. Suddenly I was more concerned with my appearance in the workplace of like, you know, did people think I was good at my job? Did they think I was pretty? Like, there were so many things that...
Because you hear about pretty privilege and all this stuff, right, mm-hmm. too? Like, in that...
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting because I think a lot of the times people are like, no one's thinking like that.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, like, I think the other piece that comes with that, too, is particularly in the, like, size conversation... People, I've been around conversations where mm-hmm. people are talking about how, like, you know, a lot of times it's a choice. It's a da 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 da. I somehow garnered a thyroid disease that made me pack on 60 pounds within a couple months.
Yeah.
And within that same thing, like, I had to, like, all of a sudden, I wasn't finding the same style of clothes that I could find when I was a smaller size.
Yeah.
And, like, even being able to say we're in a situation where like everyone's getting a t-shirt, right? They ordered a bunch of smalls and mediums and like you're not getting the XL and like you can't get the t-shirt because you're one of the only XLs, like things like that where it's like maybe you haven't experienced it, but like there are real implications of not fitting the standard whatever, and that is also a piece of DE&I.
Yeah, and that t-shirt example is one of my go-tos. I mean, I even talked about it at my gym. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the first ways that you can show that you are inclusive and that everyone belongs in your organization is, yeah, when you have events where there's t-shirts, are you choosing a vendor that has extended sizes?
Yes.
Just don't even, like, from jump make somebody question whether or not they're going to have, you know, your shirt size. And there's just so many little things that, like, even with, you know, something like size that you can do throughout your workplace, you know, accommodations. If you're an organization that travels a lot, are you allowing certain employees to expense two seats? You know, like, there's so many things that you can just do to make sure you are treating everyone, you know, equitably.
Yeah. We recently had this event where it was a Black event. It was a Black History Month event for Black insurance agents. And I had two of my coworkers there that were saying, like, you know, I really felt like maybe I needed to be in the background a little bit more in order to not feel like I was, like, trying to infringe on a space that belonged to, like, this is honoring this, you know, and I don't belong to that group, so I really wanted to leave space for that. And I was like, you know what, that is so respectable, and that is so, like, mm-hmm. thank you, but also you are so needed in that space, because a lot of the times when you don't belong to a group and a group is being celebrated or things are affecting a group, a lot of the times the people that look like everyone else are the ones that can spread the message the best. So I'd love to speak to you a little bit about maybe that feeling of, like, imposter. I'm wondering if it's almost like imposter syndrome, or is it like just not wanting to come off as like, I'm here to save you and speak on your behalf. Like, what is that like being an ally and an advocate, say to someone that is in the LGBTQ group or someone that belongs to a group of color?
Yeah. Such a good question. And that is so big for me. I mean, it's partly why I'm like squirming even in this seat, because like my fear is getting it wrong and like making it the problem worse. Like, because I know I carry a lot of privilege. I'm white, I'm cisgendered, I'm heterosexual. It's like white guys than me, right? So like, I know I'm not, you know, I'm not the spokesperson for DE&I, and I constantly fear I'm going to say something wrong, I'm going to do something wrong, I'm going to, you know, be disrespectful. Yeah. And
or just even like without having the context to be able to like take part in certain conversations. Yeah. Like I really, really feel you on this, because I feel like this is something, especially as someone that's like having a lot more of these conversations since I started this podcast. Right. I have the same fear, and I'm a woman.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, I really don't want to say anything that offends other women or that like makes like, that's one of the reasons I wanted to make the podcast color purple. Because I know a lot of women don't like identify with pink, and like, I'm a pink girly, but
I love that you also just like thought of all that too.
Yeah. I think, and that's one of the things where like, you know, when you are a part of a group or many groups, I check off a lot of boxes, girl. And that's something that I'm like, I'm conditioned in that thinking because I'm a part of these conversations a lot.
Yeah.
And so I can't even imagine as someone that kind of almost has to put yourself in those places to make sure you gain that perspective.
I think it's just something I'm always trying to balance, because I, at the end of the day, I also don't want to do nothing. I don't want to say nothing. I don't want to be a bystander. I don't want to be complacent. I don't want to, you know, sit in my privilege and be like, well, this isn't affecting me, so I'm not going to do anything about it. Like, so trying to find that balance of that, you know, action focused, you know, allyship is something I'm always working on. And I guess what I fall back to is like, at the end of the day, if I mess up, if I say something wrong, hopefully somebody educates me and corrects me and I learn from it. And then I just become a better advocate. And so putting myself out there and speaking up, you know, it's practice and it's learning. And, you know, I guess I'd rather just try and fail than not do anything at all is kind of the best I can do. And, you know, I am, I think, a deeply empathetic person, almost to a fault. And so I do just like really try to feel for people and experiences that I don't relate to. And some of that comes, I think, too, with, you know, gratitude practice and things like that. You just want to, at the end of the day, like help people succeed. Yeah. And any privileges that I have, like I want everyone to have access to all of those privileges and resources.
One thing I will tell you, like from the perspective of someone that is typically, you know, very included in those rooms and typically a part of those groups, you know, as long as you're trying, even just existing in those spaces, whenever I see someone that is at the very least just trying to understand, like happily, you will receive feedback on, or like even in the moment, just be told like, hey, you know, like the intention is there.
Yeah.
Let me make sure to like guide you and steer you. And I really don't think that that's ever something like, while that fear of getting it wrong is so real and so valid and so like, I want you to know, as long as you're trying and that intention is felt, like you will only ever be embraced from that perspective of like, this person is here. Like this person is trying.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, like you probably historically have not had the same context to be able to say all the things exactly right.
Yeah.
But at the very least, you're in a space where you're trying to learn and you're trying to like give a bit of even perspective from your point of view of how maybe efforts could be pushed forward, you know, maybe in a more, I don't want to say palatable way, but like, okay, the idea is there.
Right.
This is how I think that it will be seen from the top. Maybe this is how we need to, because you know, like it's having someone that is not necessarily, here's what I'll say. Having the burden of feeling like you're always the one that has to advocate for a certain thing to others gets so exhausting.
Yeah.
It goes back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier. And so even just having a vehicle and having someone that's willing to like help and be a vehicle and add on to that train, like just know we appreciate you. You're bringing so many different conversations to the forefront that I bet probably weren't being spoken about in the rooms that you are, that you're bringing them in.
And I try to make them, like, when we have our conversations in our committee, like, we try to bring it back to, like, commercial real estate, bring it back to, like, Colliers, because there's tons of resources out there on DE&I and a lot of the topics we talk about, but there aren't that many that are specific to commercial real estate. So I feel like that's kind of that value I add, and I always try to, like, I appreciate you making the comment even earlier in our conversation about my post that I, you know, commented who the creator was of that TikTok that I saw, because it's like, you know, if I can connect the pieces of, you know, maybe resources that already exist or people who are already doing this great work, like, I'm not trying to take credit for these ideas. I'm not trying to, you know, it's like, how can we take this really helpful information and how can I, like, widen that reach and get it to people and
amplify, but not be the, try to be the pillar.
Yeah.
And that's something, like, when people, like, getting into this, you know, saviorism topic of, like, how do I be a good ally and a good advocate and not try to come off as I'm in here and I'm gonna be, you know, the DEI champ.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things is, like you're saying, being the amplifier, but not trying to be the pillar, the white cape, the coming in and just being like, yeah, this was my idea.
Yeah.
Like,
that's why I wanted it to be a committee too. I was like, I want multiple people involved. I don't want it to just be like my pet project. Like, I know I'm talking a lot about it on this podcast, but the reality is, like, it's a group of us that are coming up with ideas and having these hard conversations. And it's a group of us that are going to eventually, you know, push things forward and make really positive changes, you know, and part of that comes with, like, yeah, I don't want it to be about me. It's never about me. I'm trying to always not make it about me and, like, the work, that, you know, but it's hard to balance. And I do think it keeps some people away. And I think that it just goes back to, like, you know, not being afraid to put yourself out there, I guess.
I mean, even with that too, like you saying, you know, it's a group made up of a lot of different kinds of people. One thing is, in every organization, you do not have to be the most progressive person, and you can't have every single person be that. Sometimes you're just not that guy. Like, that's just how it is. And here's the thing, if you're not that person, it is okay, because you need to play for your strengths of your organization. In the end, if you see someone that would be able to champion something, but you don't necessarily feel like you can be a part of it, then that is okay. Don't feel like you need to step into the conversation and then kind of come in and just not be wholeheartedly there. And then the other piece of it too that I think is really, really important is that the way that you guys are treating the DEI committee of, it's not just black and white.
Yeah.
Where I think that's something that a lot of times gets confused among groups that don't have a lot of these conversations, is there is so much further, if the deeper you get into this equitable workplace work, it's not just about race, guys. Like, it's about size, it's about socioeconomic background, it's about all of these different factors that really, really make up all of the people that work with us.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, people, when they think of, like, DE&I, you come to mind some of the, you know, obvious popular ones. You know, race or you know, sexual orientation even, or you know, but I love, I mean, Colliers Corporate even has, like, ERG groups for veterans, you know, caregivers. There's so many different, you know, like you said, ways that people identify and that people want to feel like they can show up to work as their authentic selves. And you want to just create, you just, there's so many things that go into it. So I agree. Like, I think that especially nowadays, sometimes it's, like, really controversial, but sometimes you're talking about, like, really non-controversial things. You know what I mean? Like,
Well,
at the end of the day, I think everyone agrees, you know, that, you know, you just want a place that people feel welcomed and can do their best work at the end of the day, you know?
And speaking of doing their best work, like, another place that, like, you brought to light for me when we were talking in Goodale Park, so the silent work conversation. A lot of the times, there are certain people in the workplace that are taking on a lot of the cultural initiatives within an organization, and it's slowing down the productivity because it's all on one person. So I'd love to talk about. Was it an article that you read, or what was it that sparked that?
like invisible labor.
Yes, kind of, yes.
Yeah. So during Women's History Month, March, our topic of conversation was, you know, invisible labor, invisible work, and how that looks like in the workplace. Because you hear a lot about it. I think a lot of people hear about it in kind of domestic, you know, partnership type spaces. Mm-hmm. But even in the workplace, women are often, you know, maybe burdened with a lot of those like unrecognized, you know, non-revenue producing, non-promotable tasks in the office. They're putting together the, you know, signatures on the birthday card. They're sending the flowers to the coworker who's sick. They're, you know, cleaning up the conference room after. They're unloading the dishwasher. They're doing all these like little things. And I didn't read the article, but somebody in our committee discussion brought up an article after COVID that shared that women reported being able to do like more of their work when they worked from home because they weren't asked to do kind of little things around the office. Mm-hmm. And so that piece on like invisible work, a lot of that also has to do with DE&I. And a lot of times DE&I, you know, it ends up falling on women or those minorities who it affects, you know, whatever, they kind of take on this. And so not only are they expected to do their day job and all of their tasks, they're now, you know, being tasked to, you know,
do the culture stuff. Yeah.
So,
which is interesting because I think a lot of times women are knocked for being the ones that bring the emotion and the ones that bring like the soft skills to the, but you need us to 100%. Do these things. Yeah. Like you need us to do these things. Yeah. This is so important.
Culture is like always on the top list of like, you know, what you're trying to do with recruiting and like initiatives. There was like a statistic in one of the articles I read and prepping for that it was like, you know, 90-something% of CEOs agree that culture is important. And it's like, you know, okay, but we don't really like allocate resources a lot of times to define the roles that, you know, end up creating that culture and do that work to make the culture what it is.
Or successful. Even spread the wealth of those roles. Like, it made me really, really excited to hear one of your teammates or something. You guys were doing like a spring office like competition.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I totally asked him about that before this too. I was like, can I share this story?
Yeah.
But like, after the conversation about like invisible work and all this stuff, like our front desk coordinator Akeem was so excited because he put together, we were having like a spring cleaning challenge and he divided the office into pods and all the pods had pod captains and basically whoever had the cleanest pod would like get a prize. And he comes over with his chart and he's like, Lindsay, like I made sure the pod captains were like equally distributed. Look at all the men as the pod captains. And I was like, you know what? Yeah. If that's how they came out of it, like it goes back to the like small changes. Like I love that. And I was just like, you know, it's something so simple that just talking about something that he never really put much thought to. And a lot of people don't put much thought to, you know, it could just be something that like, okay, yeah, now this really simple task or now projects that evolve around, you know, spring cleaning, we got to make sure it's not just the women in the office doing it.
Yeah.
And so I love that story.
Well, it's so cool because like, if nothing else, you sparked a thought and you sparked a piece of conversation.
Yeah.
And that is all sometimes like, if that's all this does. And I love that because that's really one of the things that we really don't, when you were talking about kind of like your meeting structure for the committee, right? You were talking about first you guys kind of, I think you were, it was like you define and then, so you kind of, it was like defining it and then you guys discuss it and then discuss how it applies to your business. Or it was something along the lines of that.
Yeah. I feel like our first year we did kind of more external, like, outward communications. We did email blasts, we did events and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that representation matters. I think that's important work. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say like it was performative necessarily, but we as a committee, you know, the benefit to being employee driven is we kind of sat together and we're like, is this like what we want to do? Is this the most effective like use of our, you know, we only meet once a month for about an hour. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of shifted to like education. And so for the last 4 months, we've just been sitting in a room together and learning about, you know, size inclusivity and fat phobia, learning about invisible work and invisible leader, labor, and learning about these different topics, and then having conversation about it, seeing how it applies to our office, seeing if there's little things that we can do around the office to make our organization better, our industry better, and then just kind of like implement that into like what we're already doing in our day jobs. Like, it doesn't always have to be this separate thing. You know, one of the things that we're working on is a like vendor directory of minority owned businesses. And the point of that is like, you know, we're already using caterers or, you know, printing vendors or things already in our day to day. We don't have to, you know, maybe do a Women's History Month post. Why don't we just use women owned businesses that month for our catering needs, or
something
for,
that is literally going to make a tangible change in your local community.
Yeah.
And like, I'm so, so glad that you, one of the biggest things, half the challenge sometimes, is just defining that these things are happening, or being able to grasp. Like, one of the reasons I started this podcast was because when we talk about the glass ceiling, we talk about it like it's this big, thick, you know, we've been trying to get past this for years, But if you, like anything, break it down into shards rather than it being one thick piece of glass, and we start to really define what make up the glass ceiling, we talk about tokenism, we talk about even just like the wage gap, we talk about all these little things, the fragments that make that up slowly start to go away, and that is how you slowly chip away at a system that has been traditionally around for longer than we've been around. And that, the way that you're talking about each month bringing in a different thing that goes beyond race, that is how we chip away and really create a more equitable workplace for everyone, not just the popular groups that are being discussed right now. It really is just about sometimes like this, let's go outside of what we're used to, look at the things that are happening just in the world in general, define these pieces for our internal group, and then see how we apply it back. And like you were saying, even in the performativism, like corporate performative DEI efforts are so rampant right now because people think that it ends with a LinkedIn post. People think that it ends with posting the headshot of your one black employee, of your one pregnant employee. And like, and being like, we love blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, that was great. But, like, sorry, I'm not meaning to sound like demeaning right now, but like, that's cool. That's a place to start. But like, let's go a step further. Instead of just using black vendors during Black History Month, doing it year round. And the other thing that you said is really important too, about making it accessible, right? Making it part of your vendor list so that it doesn't feel like people have to, oh, I want to use a black vendor for my printing necessity. I have to like go through all the files and it's within this folder of this folder of this folder. No, let's put it in a place that's easily accessible to everyone so that in order to make your efforts, you don't have to go an extra layer and it almost be a little bit more difficult. That's the other thing, right? Like in work, it's a lot of times about convenience. What's 100%. Efficient?
And money. Like,
and money.
We talked about like pricing. Like, how can we kind of offset? Like, sometimes going locally just costs more. And that's the reason why it's easier to like order from Jimmy John's. And so part of it, it's eliminating any barriers. And like, maybe it comes down to like having a conversation with that business owner and just say, hey, we'd love to use you for more corporate events. For all you know, they're willing to give you a 20% discount because you're ordering for 100 people.
So like, on a consistent basis.
Right. So like, so like, we're kind of trying to do that research and that legwork so that it is a really easy decision for other people in the office. And like, the goal for me, you know, is that I feel like it should be more like in the background. Like, it should be something that is just kind of woven into what you're doing like every single day. At least that's kind of where we're focusing or trying to. And I love that we're able to also kind of explore this and explore that. Like, it's new, and it's, like I said, a group of us that meet every month. I love that there's people on the committee from like all different departments, all different, you know, levels in, within the company. And like, I think the more that organizations can have just that outlet and just allow people to have conversations and be flexible with like what DE&I looks like for that organization, like, I think people would be surprised at what can get accomplished.
And even allowing people to make the choice to be a part, a conscious choice to be a part of those efforts or not.
Yeah.
Because I think that's, even going back to like something we talked about a little bit earlier was not everyone is going to be your culture champion. You cannot have an office full of culture champions sometimes because some people, that's not their strong suit. You think about someone that's a high D, high C personality. That's not where their strengths lie sometimes. Yeah. And so not making it everyone's mission of like, you know, at our next company-wide meeting, I want you all to da-da-da-da DEI effort. Letting people choose to be the ones that champion these missions and then dissipating it to how it can be, you know, actions that can be done every day by everyone else.
Yeah.
That's also how you get the best work done.
Yeah. Because and that's like for anything.
Yes.
Like to to be clear, I don't hear any companies going like to all of their employees and like, how does this policy work for you? You're always going to get people who disagree on everything. So like, I agree. Like one thing that is nice is like, we all want to be there. We all want to have this conversation. We all want to like go back and be those advocates. And you know what? It isn't for everyone, but I, right now it's like, it's not our goal. Like,
It's for those that want it and need it. And boom. I love it. Well, I am like, I'm at a loss for words just because this is like, I really, really just appreciate you coming on and being a part of this conversation. See, like, settle.
Less nervous.
It's funny because like, no matter what, it's never any easier to be in front of a camera or be having these type of conversations. Yeah. Because these are more vulnerable conversations. It really is about the way that we are feeling and showing up at work. And while it's important that we have people that, you know, are wanting to be a part of these conversations and kind of doing this and kind of thinking like we do, right? It's also really, really important to bring these conversations into spaces where they're not being brought up a lot. And it's like you said with commercial real estate, I think a lot of the times the connotation is that commercial real estate has we do have a lot of women in it. Like there are a lot of women property managers, right? But it's also like, maybe this is made up by women, but it's not being women led in a lot of places. There's not a lot of leadership that are, you know, consistently being brought to the table and seeked out to be part of a table that affects a lot of women.
I know I'm sometimes still surprised because I am surrounded by so many incredible women in my industry. Like switching to property management was huge. But like, brokerage still isn't like that. And even, you know, on the asset manager owner level, I still work with predominantly, you know, men are my clients. And even, you know, I go to properties and on the job site, like I think people would be surprised how often I'm still the only female showing up at meetings, or I'll be on a Zoom call and kind of giggle to myself, like I'm the only, you know, woman on this call. And like, you know, I'm obviously used to that now, but you know, I think people kind of forget because maybe throughout the office you see a lot more, you know, women, and maybe in your respective department.
But you got to think about where you're seeing them. Right. You got to think about where you're seeing them. If it's a secretary, if it's, you know, the person.
A lot of support roles, I feel like, are carrying the weight of diversity in our industry.
Yes.
And I agree. It's like we need to look at those numbers from, I loved in the last episode talking about the Fortune 500 companies. And I remember seeing a post on LinkedIn and it was like, the number of female CEOs went from 7% to 9%. And it was this like great, and I literally was like, we are celebrating this?
We're still celebrating
9%? Like, are you kidding me? It was almost like, I was just irritated. But like,
because
it's still like shockingly low. And so, I think that that's why those conversations still have to happen. And I think that sometimes people don't realize that or don't think about it, because you do see so many more, you know, women in the workforce.
When you look around.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not
who holds the power.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's about who's making the money. Who's yeah. making the money? Who's making
who? He also said that, or Bob said that in the last episode
yeah.
too.
Yeah, like, I did. The money is where the action happens.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times that action isn't happening from people, from women, because they may be in a position to suggest, but they're not in the position to execute.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's one of the things with, you know, trying to build more women leaders. In one of the upcoming episodes, one of the things we're going to be talking about is trying to build that role for yourself and advocating for yourself that you deserve things. It is very daunting. And a lot of the times it takes a lot to get to that point, like where women feel like I'm going to have to work this 20 years before I can.
Yeah.
But it's doing things like what you're doing that is truly building. This is leadership. And being able to, again, even if you're just sparking a new idea within mm-hmm. someone on your team that is making these conversations happen, like that is leadership. So I thank you for your leadership.
Yeah.
And it's really, really inspiring to watch. So thank you for coming on and thank you for being a part of it.
I love your podcast. You like are living on my extrovert dreams. But I will happily be an awkward guest anytime you would like. Yay. I love these conversations. I think you're doing amazing work. And yeah, thank you for having me.
Yay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much. If you are just tuning in for the first time, thank you for joining us. If you're coming back, I better see you again next time. And Lindsay, again, you're awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Adios. That was awesome.
Okay,
this is going to definitely be our longest episode yet, which is
how long was it?
So cool. How many? 57 minutes.
Ooh.